All right, welcome back to the War Room. I'm here with Carsten again to talk about Supercross. It's been a little bit. We've been traveling the last 2 weeks, but we're back ready to break down round six of Glendale, Arizona Supercross. And safe to say, it was eventful. And it's really been an eventful past couple weeks.
Yeah, this was a great race. And it's been nice to have good, solid racing with no mud for a couple weeks.
Oh, my goodness. Yes. I mean, is it weird to say that, like, when we were done with the Triple Crown after round five, that I was like, I still feel like how I felt after Anaheim 1. I still have no idea what's going to happen.
Yeah, a little bit, because with the Triple Crown even, it's, you know, it's kind of up in the air. You never know. And, like, Coop got the win. He didn't win a single race. So it's kind of still – a little,
he pulled a Levi. He pulled a Levi from last year.
Yeah. No, I agree though, 100%.
Yeah, and I mean, just talking about what happened a couple rounds before this. I mean, I think the biggest thing to talk about is AP getting that win. I mean, mm-hmm. I was fired up, and I think you couldn't write a better story than for him to get it done, wearing the same gear that he wore when he wiped out with half a lap to go in Detroit.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, that's
just awesome.
Yeah, that's how you come back and make a statement. Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, and also, look, we're through six rounds and we've had five different winners. That's pretty freaking cool.
Yeah,
and that just shows, hey, we every year we talk about how stacked the field is. Well, this year it really is that stacked, because on average, by the end of a season, with some one-off crazy wins or something like that, we average somewhere between 4 to 6 or 5 to 7, you know, different race winners. We're already at 5, and we're not even close to halfway through the season of 17 rounds. We're at round 6, and I can still think of guys that are pretty much a deadlock to win at some point, like a Tomac. Tomac's going to win one. I think El Hombre is going to win one, and I think there's going to be someone that just comes out of the blue. Some kind of rando that gets a dub. So I predict at this pace, we will have 8 different winners.
Wow.
But
really?
We'll see. Knock on wood. But I do think we could hit 8. We could hit 8.
I could see it. I mean, dude, it's so exciting right now because you never know what's going to happen. Like, you know, obviously there's the guys that you kind of anticipate to be top 5, but as far as who's going to win, I mean, it's so, like, with the fantasy thing, dude, with Bubba Mex, it's so hard to pick. I don't know.
And you look at the qualifying chart, and like the top 3 may be like, you know, a half a second faster than like 4th and below, but you get to 4th and below and they're all separated by like thousandths of a second.
Yeah.
Like not even tenths. Like it's all
right there.
They were all at like 107.1 and then the second decimal in qualifying or something like that. Oh, that was the first round of quali. The weird thing about quali for this last weekend was they actually got significantly faster in the second round of qualifying, more so than the first when the track was less broken down, which did not make sense at all. I didn't think that we'd start throwing down 104s and 103s, but in the first quali session, they were throwing down 106s and 107s. So I don't know what was going on. But anywho, that was just an interesting takeaway I had from that. But yeah, I mean, let's talk about round 6 in Glendale. I don't know how else to say it. Vintage Kenny Win, right? I mean,
oh yeah.
Any initial thoughts on that?
The guy absolutely crushed it. Led every lap. You know, he was fast all day. And dude, he is riding good. He was passing guys in that heat race all over the place. I mean, he's just fast everywhere. Like he's cooking, dude. He's pretty far down in the points right now. Comparatively, 15 points is usually not far down, but whenever you've got somehow 5 guys ahead of you in that spot, you know, it's a competitive season, obviously, but dude, I think he's in a great spot to have some momentum on his side and really start knocking them down. What do you think?
Oh, I mean, yeah. And you know, when we were talking about Kenny on the Suzuki last year, right, the main thing everyone was talking about is, look, Kenny's got the speed almost on kind of I mean, he could be on a privateer bike and still be fast, but he's only going to be fast if he's comfortable and happy.
Mm-hmm.
So a happy Ken Roczen is a freaking deadly Ken Roczen. So he looks comfortable. He looks happy. The bike is doing what he predicts it's going to do. And you can really tell when he's going his fastest, when he looks his slowest. I know that doesn't sound correct, but when you watched him burn the whole field by 13 seconds or whatever it was in this last race, and you actually saw him on camera, he is going his fastest when he looks like when he's riding with so much effortlessness, if that makes sense. Like, he is at his quickest when his technique just comes across as like, is he trying? Like, it looks like he's just floating out there. And then you see the lap times and you're like, oh my gosh, it's like 2/10 faster than the rest of the field. It just doesn't make sense.
That's so true. You know what it looks like? Especially when he's going over the whoops. He looks so solid on the bike and there is so little movement in the bike besides going forward that it looks like he's not moving very fast. That's so true. Like, it literally looks like he's just sitting there floating and just sitting still. But really, it's just he's not – there's no side to side. There's no
– yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just
– his head is just there.
He's just cruising.
It is insane. The dude is the definition of art on a motorcycle when he's riding. It is so fun to watch. Now, it would have been a little bit fun to kind of see him pass a few guys to get there instead of just pull the whole shot and dust people like Kenny is kind of trademarked for doing, especially like in 2017, 2016. Sure, could have been a little more fun, but I was just happy to see Kenny get a win. And I don't know if he fully inserts himself in the title hunt, but I think he's going to be in the title hunt just from how consistently fast he's been riding. And yeah. And he's had a lot of tough luck in the first couple rounds. Heck, he and Malcolm both couldn't even make it past turn one and Anaheim one, and the same thing happened in the second race. And he's had some tough luck. But he's bounced back from it every single time and maximized the points, however he can. And he continues to impress. And most importantly, he continues to look really comfortable in that Suzuki. So yeah. I think that can, if that can stay the same throughout these more soft rutted tracks we get on the East Coast, now that we're kind of moving away from that hard pack stuff, if that bike continues to perform the same in regards to rideability and comfortability for Kenny, when we go into these softer tracks, he will be there, in my opinion.
I agree 100%. Now, Jason Anderson's been there too. I mean, he's been sitting right up at the front with great speed this season as well. And he also had a great ride and was able to pull a gap.
Yeah, no penalties this time, right?
Yeah. Well, dude, that's so true. Even with the penalties, he's still been sitting up near the front this season.
Oh, yeah. And I'm not even sure he fully deserved that penalty or that triple crown. I mean, I get it. Like, you're not supposed to go full speed off the track. Safety thing, I get it. But I don't – if you're starting from zero – like, I think the rules are you're not supposed to accelerate offside, to the side of the track. It's like, okay, but if you're starting from zero, how does he get going without – like, I don't know. I need to look at the actual fine print of the rules, but I felt like it – like I was kind of okay either way. Like, okay, if you call the penalty, I somewhat get it. He kind of sped through. It's a clear violation. But on the other hand, like, the dude got freaking leveled. Like, I don't know. He's not going to go through those whoops. So, like, I don't know. Anywho, that's completely off besides the point. Yeah, no, El Hombre rode so good. And this track I think was a little more start dependent than the ones previous to this one, because of the fact that you look at the long rhythm sections, right? And they were really, really good. I liked the track in regards to just one, it was symmetrical and just looked freaking cool. And it was huge because Glendale's got the football stadiums, it's got the most floor space to work with. Right. The track had a lot of long rhythm sections. But with these long rhythm sections, it also paired it with some really steep jumps, like really pointy, really steep. Didn't give you a lot of round over to give you room for error or forgiveness at Nate Thrasher if you over jumped or, under jumped or case something. And on top of that, with the particular dirt, it turned very slippery really quick. Mm-hmm. So what that kind of What it kind of resulted in is, especially with those long rhythm sections having a slight bend in them in the halfway point, it kind of made those long rhythm sections a little bit one line, because if you're taking the outside line, you're having to cover more distance because of that bend. So the faster line was to stick on the inside. So we found more people getting advantages by taking that one line, and it kind of became more one line as it went. So it made it a little bit tougher to pass than maybe some other tracks. I wouldn't say it was impossible to. It just, it was a little more start dependent. That's just all I'll say. So I wouldn't say to the point that El Hombre was a for sure lock if he was the one to pull the whole shot to win it, but he was riding well enough to where if the roles are switched and Kenny's behind El Hombre, and he's in first, there's a good probability he can pull it off because he was riding that good. So that's just something to think about. Obviously what happened, and Kenny did everything correct. It's almost like revenge for what happened on the night AP won, where Kenny overcooked it trying to pull away from AP. And this time Cowboy kind of overcooked it trying to catch back up to Kenny. So that was kind of a little bit ironic. I think in this scenario, Kenny did a fantastic job. El Hombre did a fantastic job. I feel like either one of those guys could have won that night. And Kenny just had a fantastic start, ripped it. Jet also had a fantastic move on Eli towards the end of the race. And once again, it was on the inside. Was it on the inside? I think it was on. Yeah, he snuck on the inside on that little like long sweeping turn. It got the inside line on the rhythm section, and once that was done, it was pretty much over.
Yeah, that was great racing by Jet. He Jet makes a track that is quite start dependent make it look like it's kind of not. You know, because he didn't get a great start. He got pushed off the track at the beginning by Coop. And then gets a great pass on Eli. I don't know, man. I think the most exciting thing this season we're going to see is some battles between Jet and Kenny. I'm very excited for that. I think that's going to be incredible. Seeing them go back and forth, because they've both got the speed. They've both got, did it look to you like some of the guys weren't really even putting up much of a fight against Jet? Like they were just kind of accepting the fact that he's faster, let him go, and not even really do a whole lot of anything.
Well, here's the thing. I know Tomac is still trying to fine tune both himself and the Yamaha. So we're seeing him start to struggle more at the end of races and look more explosive at the front. And we're still trying to figure out where Tomac sits. Like, obviously, he had a really bad off race in round 5, right? Like, just not good. No way around it. Not good. Falling from third all the way back to 10th and blaming it on our arm pump from the rear suspension. It just ain't gonna, like, I get it. If he was blaming the rear shocks. If your bike's off and you're uncomfortable, you're having to grip the bike harder and make it do what it doesn't want to do. So you do get arm pump easier that way. However, this is just part of what comes when you've been off the bike for 6 months, unfortunately. So I think he has more progress to get in regards to where the bike's at. And he's also got to figure out how to kind of toe that fine line of pushing himself to that extra 1%, but also knowing when to have that vet rider mentality and just be like, you know what, these kids that are out in front of me right now about to kill themselves, I'll let them go kill themselves, and wipe out in the whoops or whatever, or send it off the end of a bowl turn because they're going too fast and flipping over themselves. And I'm just going to keep stacking these points. I may not necessarily win this championship, but I am not going to make myself lose it. I'm going to make these guys win it. I think that's the only way he's going to get this done. If he does win the championship, is to focus on not losing it and stacking up these points, being consistent. He will win. But, I think he is kind of in this area where he needs to figure out what he wants to do. Does he actually want to try to be in that top 1% of speed? Or does he want to check back into like an older Chad Reed mentality where he's just focused on stacking the points and being Mr. Consistency? You can't keep flirting this line to this degree one way or the other and expect not to kind of have some mistakes. When you're trying to do both, you know, sometimes, you know, you keep flipping that switch on and off and you see mistakes happen because your body's like, okay, I'm pushing for this part of the lap. And then, oh, I'm a little bit scared, you know, you need to tone it down here. And it's just, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, what to you is a Tomac fourth in this race, a bounce back ride to you? Some are saying yes, some are saying no.
Yeah, I think it was until Jet came up to the pack and passed him. Because before that, he was sitting there. He was cool, calm, collected. He had a podium. It was looking good.
Big
chill. Everybody was kind of where they were. Yeah, and there was not really anything wrong with that. And then he gets passed, and it's like, okay, did he have more speed in him? Like, was he riding all out for what he can do right now? And if so, like, if all out right now is a third place finish, then, and subsequently a fourth place finish, then I would say, you know, he's on the right track, but I wouldn't say, you know, he's not UT, you know, he's not back. You know what yeah. I mean? Like, Tomac's not back. I would say he's getting there. Is what I'd call it.
The question is, can better. He get there before time runs out?
Yeah. There's a difference between winning week in and week out and getting almost on the podium week in and week out. Because right now, whoever is, there's so many great guys, and it seems like, you know, each track has a guy that suits it best and is able to ride it the best. And so, you know, to try and be that guy every week or at least 1 week is not an easy task right now. So,
yeah. Well, and the fan, like I'd say the fans in general have a very, there is no in between. Either you have kind of like diehard Tomac fans, kind of where I'd say we kind of sit, maybe we kind of sit somewhere in the middle of these two, but the majority of fans sit on one side of either, well, this is the changing of the guard. Tomac is just going to keep doing this all season where he keeps having a 10th and then a fourth or a third and a 10th and a third or a second, maybe gets one win, but he's going to slowly fade out of the title hunt. The other half of the fans are like, look, he's been off the bike 6 months. If this is the worst it's going to get right now, just you wait till we get to Daytona. Just wait for Daytona. He's the king will return. So it's like, I don't know what we're going to get. I really don't. I do think Daytona will tell a story because that, I mean, Eli is the king of Daytona. There's no way around that.
Yeah. Well, and it depends too how motivated he is to try and push it that hard because, you know, he's got to be thinking of the risk reward of it right now as well. You know, it's the first bad injury he's had in a little while. Now he's sitting there going, okay, do I, you know, take what I've got and get out while I'm healthy and I can enjoy a nice retirement? Or do I push it and potentially get an injury that is not just going to retire me, but now it's going to get in the way of me living a nice, healthy life post racing? Which there's something to be said for that. You know, a lot of guys, they end up retiring and, you know, not only can they not ride a bike anymore, but they can't, you know, throw a football with their kids like they want to.
No.
So I'm sure there's all these thoughts in the back of his mind, and he still got fourth and did well. So yeah. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like I said, I think it's very hard to predict which way he goes. But that being said, Hunter Lawrence with a P5.
Changing of the guard. Man. He's coming up.
He's looking good, dude. I mean, he was kind of just more of like a back of the top 10 dude these first five rounds. And, you know, he definitely, I mean, obviously, you know, he was kind of coming through. I mean, it was almost like he and Jet kind of worked in tandem once Jet got past Hunter. I almost think that Hunter was being a little too nice to Jet with the way he let him by. But, I mean, he does train with the guy every freaking day. So he kind of may know, yeah, I mean, look, I know what the numbers on the practice laps are. He's going to get by me eventually. I might as well just try to latch on. And that's what he did.
Yeah, and he did well.
Got all the way up to P5. And, yeah, I mean, it was the best and most comfortable he's looked so far. So I think he's going to continue to be a top 10 guy. and could maybe break his way into being a top five guy consistently by the end of the season. I mean, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, he is brothers with Jet Lawrence, so he doesn't look very good right now, and he's not getting a lot of attention. But, you know, truth be told, he's a rookie just like Jet is, and even more of a rookie because he didn't race 450 in motocross, and he's crushing. He's number nine. Like, that's – so there's nothing wrong with that whatsoever.
Here's a hot take. I think he's doing exactly what we expected out of Christian Craig last year.
Exactly. I would agree. Yeah. Yeah, dude, that's actually so true. That's crazy. And honestly, he's doing what I expected Christian Craig to be doing this year.
There's a lot of things we expected Christian Craig to be doing these last 2 years, unfortunately. And the dude is just on the struggle bus. Some of it out of his control, some of it in his control, maybe. I don't know. But he's had little flashes. And you know this dude's, you know, a really, really talented rider. He's got a lot of figuring out to do. So we'll touch on that a little bit later. But yeah, I mean, Hunter is looking really, really good, and he's being massively slept on. I almost wonder if he benefits from being able to be in the shadow of Jet and continue to just focus on developing the little things and not so much having at the front of his mind, like, I got a podium. I've got to be in the title hunt. I've got to do this. I really do. We have to remind ourselves that Hunter is also a freak of nature in regards to that motor, you know, being on a motorcycle. He is very fast. He is very, very talented. You know, honestly, if it weren't for all the injuries he dealt with in the earlier parts of his career, he would have been a 450s way quicker than Jet. You know, also, if it weren't for Christian Craig, he may have moved up to 450s before Jet as well. Who knows? You know, there's that.
So, yeah.
I don't know, but I think Hunter has a decent probability of catching up to Jet within the next year or two. We'll see, especially if he stays healthy. Someone else who we're glad is healthy, despite, you know, tasting a little bit of dirt, is the Cowboy AP. Man, I tell you what, I thought we were in for a good battle. It was almost like a repeat of round four, or was it? Yeah, round four when he won.
Yeah.
Round four when he was behind Kenny. And like less than 1 second off, and looked like he was kind of either hanging within 1 second or maybe inching towards him just a little bit. And apparently Chase Sexton started to rub off on him because he tucked the front end. And
so unfortunate.
And like Chase Sexton, it just looked like someone just kicked it. Like it didn't look it didn't look like he did anything to do it. It was on the ground. And it just shows you how slippery that track got by the main event. So, like, you know, it's not even – I wouldn't even say it's a Chase Sexton thing. Like, you know, I mean, heck, we've seen how stable Chase Sexton has looked on that KTM. So, obviously, he's made a big change, and that bike's flushing well with him. So, I don't want to, you know, bash Sexton at all because he's been doing a fantastic job. But, yeah, he had a good comeback ride, worked his way back into the top 10. I forget, did he finish 10th or 9th? I can't remember.
Let me see here.
I think he barely squeezed into the top 10.
Stand by for stats.
Standing by
10th.
Ah, look at me.
10th right there. So he got in the top 10. He went down and he was trying to get back up and he just couldn't get back. You know, obviously he didn't want to take anybody out, getting back going again. And so, yeah, he was just having to let guys go by, so he got pretty far down off that little crash.
I think he finally got back up at the 18th position, I believe. It took him a while to, I think, pick up the bike as well. That was another problem. It was weird with how slippery it was. It was almost like the handlebar was wedged into the ground. It was really weird.
Yeah, it was on the broadcast. Whenever he fell, Ricky was talking about how there was like a shiny spot that he slid on, and it looked like if you weren't paying attention a lot, he was so AP goes, falls, Kenny circles him and goes, yep, he fell right there. And it's like, we can see he's on the ground.
thank you, Ricky. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Like, the camera's just on him. It's like, yep, there he went down right there. It's like, yeah, he sure did.
That's almost like the guys in the old TV show Wipeout when they used to, like, you know, you know what I'm talking about? And they'd have the lines and everything circling people when they're bouncing off of the obstacles. That was a funny show. Not to deviate too far from it. It was basically exactly like that.
Yeah.
But you know, good comeback ride from him to salvage the points. And, you know, he's still in the picture for the title hunt. So I think if he keeps being consistent, and most importantly, through all six rounds, he has showed consistent top five level speed. And this is without a doubt. I don't care how the rest of the rounds go. This is without a doubt AP's best season he's had so far. Mm-hmm. Like, he's looked really consistent, and he's finally shown a consistent top five level speed that's capable of winning races when he puts it all together, as he finally put it all together in round four. And I'm excited to see how he continues to push. And speaking of pushing, look at these transitions here.
Mm-hmm. Webb. This is great.
This is great. This is great. Yeah. Cooper Webb. He won my People's Champion Award of the race for punting Vince Freeze off the track like he deserves to be. But that's besides the point. Webb kind of continues his streak of not being good at Glendale. Looked off just the whole race. Kind of was working his way backwards. Just did not look consistent. And almost looked a little bit tight. I don't know exactly what it was. I couldn't exactly figure out where he was losing time, but he did a good job at making sure he kept it on two. And look, I think he has a historical average of 7.8 finishing position at Glendale. I think that's the correct stat that I heard. So this isn't a track he's historically great at. It's not. I think Tomac has an average finishing position at Glendale of 1.8, I believe. So obviously he came with high expectations for how well he's been riding through five rounds before, but this isn't his best environment. So
yeah,
I expect him to bounce back in Dallas. We'll see how well he does with that. He's been riding really well on the hard packed tracks, and Dallas with the red dirt is going to be a mix of hard packed in some areas with the red dirt, and then some areas where the red dirt's a little bit looser and gives you a false sense of tackiness. So that's why there's always a lot of tucking of the front ends in Dallas, because certain sections of the track will make you feel real good. And like, you can lean her over a little bit more, you know, flex the frame just a little bit more. And then you get into one turn that looks the same as the others and you just slide out. So we'll see what happens there. But yeah, I mean, what did you think of Webb? Did you see anything in particular of that was maybe causing him to kind of fall backwards a little bit and kind of just hang around at eighth? Or
I don't know.
Just an overall bad race.
Yeah, it might have just been, you know, not his race. It also might have been, I don't want to say fitness level, but just maybe not being able to maintain the speed through the end, because he started out very fast. And so, you know, towards the end of the race, Jet got around him, Ferrandis got around him. He was, like you're saying, just kind of working his way backwards. So, you know, he might have just recognized, hey, this is not my night, and no point to push whenever I'm, you know, still in the championship hunt. We can, you know, chalk this one up to just not being my track and, you know, come back next week, you know, 2 weeks, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally agree. I do, like, I don't feel like he personally, like, took a percentage off of his effort, but I feel like he mentally was just focused on hitting his lines and making sure he kept it on two.
Yeah.
That just kind of looked how he was riding, and he did a good job. I mean, he rode very well defensively. Malcolm was all over him, but.
Oh yeah. He was going for it there at the end.
Well, Malcolm was doing everything he could to try to find an alternate line. I mean, Malcolm was going freaking three in and then skimming out of the whoops, trying to see if that could work to just try to find a way around him. And that wasn't working either. Like I said, the track in a lot of places was very one line, especially towards the end once it broke down. And you know, tough to pass, as Malcolm found out, and as a lot of people found out, wasn't just him. So, Chase Sexton, buddy was a little bit messed up, and we knew nothing about it going into this race. I mean, did you hear anything about it before the race? I didn't.
No, I did not hear anything until I think you sent something about it, in the group chat.
During qualifying.
Yeah. But besides that, yeah, no. And it was very obvious. I mean, Chase was not fast. Mm-hmm. Which I actually had a little bit of a side bet with one of my buddies. And once I knew of this hand injury, I got him to bet on Chase Sexton. I was like, he's like, who's good? And I was like, well, Chase is in the points lead. So, you know, maybe
he's got the red go plate. With him.
He's got the red plate. He's, you know, he's on KTM. My buddy, he's a KTM fan. He's like, oh, okay, Chase Sexton. I was like, yeah, like, great pick. Great pick. Yeah. So
he lost money.
But the hand was definitely only a dollar.
Okay. Know.
Nobody's going broke. Nobody's getting rich, but you know, we had an exchange. Definitely had a messed up hand, though, because it is not like him to be finishing ninth. Yeah.
Well, and the weird thing about Supercross in general is how little these guys reveal about everything. It's mm-hmm. so weird. Like, especially when, like, it doesn't matter to keep it secret a lot of the times. Like, heck, Hayden Deegan continues to say, you know, even in the interviews post-race from round five with the East Coast, that all he did was sprain his wrist and he was only off the bike for a week. And he even said that on the broadcast, too, like in pre-race interviews and stuff. When it's very evident that he had a scaphoid injury and was off the bike for like 3 to 4 weeks, maybe even five, and had only been on the bike before Detroit for like maybe a week, because it was more of like a scaphoid fracture or something like that, or just something more substantial than a sprained wrist. Mm. So, you know, but then Deegan gets on the bot, he's talking afterwards, like, if only you guys knew, like, how hard, like, I think he won the heat race maybe or something like that. And he was like, if only you guys knew, like, how hard this has been the last couple of weeks. It's like, well, maybe if you tell us, then we would, like, it's like, if you don't tell us, we're going to assume, we're going to keep your expectations the same. If you do tell us, then we're going to be like, we're going to look at your result and be like, wow, that's incredible being he had this to deal with, right? So, like, if Chase did what Deegan did and what the majority of guys do, and they just don't tell it, they don't tell a soul, even if it's a freaking, they're riding on one leg, like, they won't tell a soul. And we'll just find out, you know, maybe after the fact, months later, when something gets leaked out, or there's just rumors swirling around from one of his guys leaking something out to the press, like, and we don't know if it's credible, yada, 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 the usual, then we would have seen him get, well, I think he got ninth, maybe. I think it was P9.
Yeah, ninth.
Yeah. We would have seen that and been like, dude, he was off. Like, is he out of the title hunt? Like, what's going on with him, you know? But because of the fact he actually revealed, you know, right before the race, but at least he gave an official statement saying, hey, look, I messed up my hand really bad on Tuesday, thought I broke it, got x-rays on Wednesday, turns out it wasn't broken, so dodged a bullet, tried to ride on Thursday, still just couldn't do it, couldn't grip the bike 100%, racing on hope and faith and painkillers so that he can grip the bike. Although what I heard is he didn't take the painkillers until the main event to try to just save it all for that. So he was doing everything without any kind of way to deal with the pain or the swelling in his left hand. The extra week off will come back and help him. And he'll be good to go for Dallas. If it's some kind of a sprain or something like that, then hopefully he'll be, I don't imagine it being 100%, but closer to it, maybe to where it's more of a non-factor.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see. That'll be something to watch the next couple of weeks. I mean, his own team was saying, you know, if he got a top five, it was as good as a win. It was that bad. Like, top 10 is phenomenal. Top five is like walking out of there with a win. So that's from his own camp. So that was interesting to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, the hands are pretty important.
Pretty important.
So. Makes sense. The one that keeps getting, you know, twisted up and breaking your heart each week along with Chase, Malcolm actually had a pretty decent, a top 10 finish, I would say. Not, you know, obviously he's showing speed in qualifying that he can win. But what's going on here? I mean, he didn't fall. Mm-hmm. At least there's that, you know?
Yeah.
Finally.
It took six rounds, but we kept it on two.
Yeah. He looked pretty fast. I mean, especially there at the end, he was cooking.
He was cooking. Like, he closed up to Webb twice. So I think he made a slight mistake because earlier in the race, he was like a tenth off of him. And I don't know what happened, but then all of a sudden he got 3 seconds behind Cooper Webb. He could have just maybe just came out of the turn, just lost a little bit of ground, lost a little bit of traction. Like, he didn't tip anything over, but like, I think there was a little mistake made when he was trying to get by Webb because he was really, really close. I thought he was going to get Webb when we were only 8 minutes into the race. So I don't know what happened, but then he just, you know, couldn't get by Webb with the end, but he closed back up to him really quick. And, you know, obviously the track is very one line, but I still think he had enough speed to get by Webb, but I still think that I wouldn't say still. I'd say this is a recent development. If we had an episode last week after round five, there were a lot of people already calling for the Husky guys to switch to the new frame, the one that AP and Chase are riding, right? And look, you look at AP and Chase in the whoops compared to Malcolm and Craig and Barsha, who are all struggling in their own ways right now. Like, at least Malcolm's got a good amount of pace, not top five pace right now. I would say he came close to having it in round five. He was battling Jason Anderson for six before he went down on the whoops. And Malcolm's got speed over one lap, but he's not in that consistent 2022 Mookie where he was always a top five, you know, lock in a podium threat. He's not back to that yet. And it's tough to tell with Malcolm, especially because he's recovering from an injury where he literally couldn't do anything for about 9 months. And on top of that, he's on the old frame. And we're comparing him to AP and Sexton, who are on the new frame, who are looking better in the whoops, which is specifically what this bike is better at. And it's specifically what his frame is worse at. That's why Cooper Webb only won two races since 2022 when they got that frame then, this older one. So I don't know. Like, if you would have asked me after round five, I would have said, I don't think it's the frame because rounds one through four, he couldn't keep it on two wheels. And even round five. And round five, he was really close to getting the top five before he tipped her over, you know? And each time he's gotten back up, he's moving up. Right, he's moving upwards. He's getting close back to a top 10. Last three rounds have been 11th, 10th, and 8th, or something like that for him. So, you know, he still has a good amount of pace, right? But when I look at Craig and I look at Barsha, and Barsha's literally being very public about how much he hates his bike. He literally said on his Instagram post or his review saying, "The bike tossed me off," or "The bike knocked me over." Like, he's saying the bike, like. If you're going out of your way to tell your general audience, not just like one-on-one, you're just like, "Hey, it was uncomfortable bike," but just to put a blast Instagram post and Twitter post saying the bike knocked me over today, not him, the bike. Like, that's saying he's having some major trouble, and that's been evident for the whole season so far for him. So when I look at it, I think Malcolm has more pace to give than what he's doing right now. He's still, in regards to pace wise, I think he's doing good, but not his maximum. And I look at him in the whoops and I'm like, yeah, that there's a lot to be made up for there. I think that was the main reason he couldn't get around Webb, is he couldn't go faster than Webb in the whoops. And he was still, even in the, just an, you know, we're going down to these, nine whoop, lanes now, even then he was the only guy I saw try to jump and go three in and then skim out, you know? So now that we're past round six, I'm like, look, just looking at the lap times and looking at the overall race performance and the race pace we're seeing, I think Craig and Malcolm, I mean, Barsha too, I care about him less, but Craig and Malcolm in particular, they've got to try. They've got to retest. They got to use this extra week to retest that Husky, that new Husky frame. I mean, it's the KTM frame. It's just going to all the Austrian bikes, right? Well, what we do know in regards to that new frame is the KTM guys got access to it just a little bit earlier and got to test it just a little bit earlier than the Husky guys did. The Husky guys didn't get to test it until like after media day. They had one day to test on it on a very hard packed California track. They had one day in a very, very, like as hard packed as it gets. It's in the middle of California on a hot, you know, I don't know about hot, it's probably in December, but you know, middle of nowhere, California, really, really hard packed track. Right. And they said that they just didn't feel comfortable on it, comfortable enough on it, regardless of lap times, to switch to it yet. So like, you know, I understand their reasoning in that scenario for not wanting to switch to it, because you can be fast on a bike, but if you can't predict what it's going to do,
useless.
It's useless. Yeah, you're just going to be tucking the front end the whole time. So I think at this point you've got the extra week off to do testing, right? I know you want to rest, but you guys have been touching the dirt. You know, with Malcolm, it's not really necessarily only one of the times he's crashed has been his fault. He's been getting hit by people. He got freezed. He got hit by Anderson going over an invisible bump, all kinds of stuff. The only accident I've seen that's 100% been his fault has been round five when he lost in the whoops. It's the only one I put on him, 100% on him. Overall, bad starts is I think the main cause for a lot of the other ones that weren't his fault. If you put yourself around a bunch of garbage, don't expect to be, you know, getting out of there clean. So fix the starts. Use it for, you know, use this extra week to go test out that new frame, and keep in mind you're going to be using this in more soft, you know, soft rutted tracks, not more of the West Coast hard pack stuff. So my guess is if they retest it, they'll retest it at their Florida facility. So I expect if they do actually take the time to retest it, and Craig, when he was talking with Steve Mathis, even said like, look, I think if we retest it now, it'd feel a little bit better. So we might do it. I think it needs to go from might to absolutely need to retest that new frame. I'm curious what you think. I don't think you can look at what AP and Chase are doing right now on that new frame and say, if I'm Nathan Ramsey, I'm saying you guys are getting on this new frame, whether you're comfortable on it or not at this point. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, obviously, you know, we're talking about guys that are usually, maybe not Christian Craig, but Barsha, you know, top five guys a lot of the time. And they're all having trouble. And yeah, I mean, the proof's in the pudding. AP and Chase are crushing. So yeah, I think that they definitely need to be using this time to see if they can get some more seconds out of the bike by making some of those changes. And, you know, it's possible that maybe they do that and it still doesn't help all three of them. But, you know, at least one of them might be able to benefit from it. If, you know, we're not getting any complaints from AP and Chase.
And so, it's the best I've ever seen AP look in the whoops. I mean, do you agree?
Yeah.
Like, AP has not been a liability in the whoops this year.
Yeah.
Well, so just imagine if we get anywhere close to the peak of Malcolm whoop speed.
Yeah. Which, if he's able to get through them like that, I mean, it's going to be incredible.
I mean, I think that's what's missing between like getting Mookie back to a consistent top five guy and a race winning threat, and him continuing to be this like, well, one night he's just a top 10 guy, one night he's really close to being top five and he spills it over. I think that's the difference maker here. I can only hope. It's been a rough start, and really so far it's been a rough entire season to be a Malcolm Stewart fan and really a Husky fan in general. So I wear this shirt with much representation of stress, remote controller thrown, cups full of pre-workout, because I was working out when watching round six or round five. Yeah, round five being thrown. Dog screaming in terror as I freak out about things, like the whole nine yards. So when you see me wearing this, you know what I've gone through. This is me wearing my heart on my sleeve over here. So anywho, yeah. all that to say, Christian Craig continues to look irrelevant. There's not much to talk about with him. He's got to test the new frame out as well. I think he has no excuse not to. If I'm Nathan Ramsey, I'm saying you're doing it and you're at least racing it for one round, whether you like it or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just to know, just to find out, just to see if maybe there's something else that they can get out of the bike there, you know?
Yep. Also, the last thing I'll say about 450s is I wish Webb would have hit Vince Freese harder.
He was maybe not come off the track and then go back over and do a burnout on him or something.
Look, I was looking for him to do a full like El Hombre or Barsha, just clean up like Pierce Brown, the guy. You know, like what Pierce Brown did to Jalik Swall. If someone did that to Freeze, oh, the crowd would go more nuts than when AP won his race. It'd be amazing.
Yeah, you might not be wrong about that. Yeah. Anyway, let's talk about 250s. We had some great battles there. I mean, these guys are – 250s are great right now. Similar to 450 in that we've got a good title fight going on. But the guys, you know, nobody is necessarily running away with it. And nobody is that much faster than anybody else. I mean, they are all riding really well.
Yeah, I mean, and talk about, you know – round six in particular at Arizona. I mean, we got exactly what we were hoping for, right? Mm-hmm. Main event, you got all three guys pull the start right next to each other for the most part. Archie had to pass one guy to get in the top three. That was all that was needed. He did that before, you know, pretty much by the end of the giant rhythm lane. So you've got 1, 2, and 3 in the points right next to each other, just duking it out. And it was everything we wanted. I think I counted 4 lead changes in the opening 10 minutes of the race, I believe. Yeah. So that was freaking awesome. And RJ came out on top, baby. And he closed back up in this championship hunt. And he just looked that's the most in control and mature I've seen him ride in that situation before. Because you have to think, RJ 2-3 years ago, sitting there in third with the top two battling it out in front of him. I think he tries to throw something down the inside, like just absolutely wild, or just tries to do something too quick and wrecks himself while trying to just get in front, you know, pass both at once or just do something crazy, right? In this case, he didn't necessarily hang back. He just kept inching closer and closer, staying within control, letting one of the guys in the front make the move. In this case, it was Jordan wrecking himself. Jordan almost kind of pulled an RJ there. I mean, not almost, he kind of did.
Mm-hmm.
Twice. You know, RJ was able to capitalize on that, and then he was able to get by Levi Kitchen and go get that dub, and he kept it on too, and he pulled away. That was just the most veteran-looking version of RJ I've seen. I mean, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, it was a very mature ride, you could say. He didn't, like you're saying, oftentimes in the past, I think he might have gotten up there and tried to just go ahead and take the lead as soon as he had an opportunity. But yeah, he, like you're saying, he didn't necessarily sit back, but he was being patient, waiting for his moment, let them duke it out for a little bit, wear each other down. And then, you know, while they're up there trying to play offense on one another, swoop in and take the lead. And that's exactly what he did. He did a great job. Man, it was a heck of a ride by him. And then he pulled the gap and finished it out. Yeah.
100%. And I will say, even though Levi Kitchen got second in that whole ordeal, look, I think Levi Kitchen is going to be the – like, obviously, he's got the red plate now since Jordan Smith, took two very important detours mm-hmm. that were not good for his health.
Nope.
Two crashes. But, he still battled back. I forget where Jordan Smith ended up finishing. I think he still ended up battling back to the top 10 somewhere in there. I forget.
Yeah, he got fourth. He did well.
Yeah. I can't believe he was able to work his way back up there. But look, what I'm seeing on Levi Kitchen with just how phenomenal his starts are and how good his overall pace is and then how good he's riding mentally and making mm-hmm. sure that he keeps it on too and is able to push others to beyond what they think they're capable of riding, but then making them still try it, man, I think he is the most mature of all these guys in regards to his race craft. I do think he is the long-term title threat. I mean, RJ, I think, depending on the track, the majority of the time will have the most pace out of all of them and the most lightning, you know, blitzing speed. But I think Levi is going to have the best starts to be the most consistent and always be up there. I mean, I think he is the biggest title threat right now. I mean, what do you think? You think it's one of the other three, like a Jordan Smith or an RJ? Or I mean, I want it to be RJ. I think just Levi is the most consistent right now.
No, yeah, I would agree. He's been doing great. And, you know, he's really been on the come up and doing better since he started vlogging. And I think maybe these other guys should consider that, you know? I mean, chefs.
Hayden Deegan, 250 SMX champion, big-time vlogger. Been vlogging since he was, like, out the womb.
Something to think about.
For all we know, like, Brian Deegan live-streamed Hayden Deegan's birth, for all we know. I don't know. No idea.
Probably not. Don't think it was out then, but.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I forgot. That is, like, you know, 18
It was a little while ago. Yeah.
Hey, you don't know. They could have had the camcorder. Okay.
Yeah. Listen, there might have been a camera. I don't know if it was hooked up to Instagram or not, but yeah.
Oh, definitely not. It was MySpace.
Jeez.
Oh, man. Yeah. Nope. Kidding. But yeah, no, he, the vlogs, we'll come back with a graph next week of all the riders who started vlogs and their average finishing position before and after. I mean, for Diggins, it's going to be a straight line, but like for Forkner, it could be, well, for Forkner, he's all like this.
Yeah. AC is one that might be dragging down the stats a little bit.
Yeah.
But you know what? It's not for everybody. Yep. It's not for everybody, right?
Yeah. You also have to factor in that he's doing a pod as well for AC. So like that could, you know,
extra effort.
The vlogs could be going more positive. The podcast could go more.
Maybe it's negative correlation.
I think so.
Long form content, not good for dirt bikes.
Speaking of negative correlations, particularly with the ground, Nate Thrasher almost deleted himself. He did delete himself both from the championship hunt. Yeah, he deleted himself from the championship hunt and almost life. That dude.
God crash.
I don't know how he walked away with just a bone bruise and a contusion. I almost want to call that BS. Yeah. But he's got 6 weeks to, I mean, hopefully literally walk it off. But, yeah, I mean, that dude went down hard. And I don't know about you. When I saw his crash in that long rhythm section, I thought he hurt himself more in the ribs from how hard his ribs hit the handlebars when he came up short and endoed.
Yeah, I was watching it back and it did look like that. And it looked like almost the angle might have been below where his chest protector comes down to, you know? And so it might have kind of, I don't know. I know I had a crash one time and my chest protector almost made it worse with the way that it was pushed into me.
Oh.
And yeah, but apparently, yeah, it wasn't. I don't know. What I would like to know is what bone was bruised, because clearly the tailbone made some serious contact.
His whole spine.
He did land. Yeah. Dude, that's what I was thinking too, is like when you land like that and it is just all compression right on your spine like that.
Well, and when we saw him stand up, he looked like he couldn't like fully straighten out his back. Did you notice that?
Like
he was able to walk like this, and he looked like he couldn't get from here to this, like this last area, you know, like if you ever pinched a nerve in your back, you know, your lower back, it's like, I kind of know what that feels like when, all right, this is as high as I can stand up right now. It's like this extra little part. I don't know if it was more of a back or a rib thing or what. I don't know what he bruised. Or what, even if this is 100% everything that he's walking away with, but either way, it looks like he's going to return in 6 weeks and he's got plenty of time to walk it off or sleep it off or whatever he needs to do. Just glad he's relatively healthy given the circumstances, but I think it's safe to say he's out of the championship hunt.
Yeah, and you know, we are talking about the guy that raced with the torn ACL, pretty much all last season. So
yeah.
He's,
and look, that points back to the same thing I was talking about earlier with Supercross guys and injuries. Everyone who had any kind of listen to any kind of podcast or show or read any articles with insider knowledge, everyone knew that he was racing on a torn ACL. It was not secret, but he never revealed it until after he hurt himself, at Atlanta, I believe, when he had a massive lead and wrecked three times in one race and finally did himself in, broke some bones or something that took him out for the rest of the year. It was never officially released by his PR team until after that. Everyone knew, but he's going up there and limping around acting like he's fine. The sport is so weird with how non-transparent they try to be with these injuries. It's just very weird to me.
Yeah. I wonder if that's a thing having to do with not trying to give other guys confidence over you. That's the only thing I can think of, really, is you don't want guys to know that they might have an edge up on you when you're battling it out. Them knowing he's got, his hand or his back or his leg or whatever is messed up. And then, it's kind of like with fighters. They don't want their opponent to know that they got something going on with their shoulder or their knee. Not that with Supercross guys, they're going to start hitting each other in that spot, but knowing that a guy is not 100%, that kind of gives you a mental, I can take him down. I can pass him. I can catch him.
I could see that, but I could see it in regards to guys knowing how far they can push someone and when they can expect them to maybe break a little bit, maybe.
Yeah.
But aside from that, I don't know if it does anything but just give a guy bad PR because people are seeing them underperform and not have something to tie it to that's out of the ordinary like it should be. I mean, sure. In regards to not revealing information to other riders, look, if you've got a bum left leg or something, and you tell everyone, hey, left leg's down, the worst that's going to happen is Justin Barsha is going to aim for the right one. He's gonna be like, all right, the left one's already taken care of. Let me take him on the right-handed bull turns, get that other one taken care of. The sports are already so chaotic in itself. I feel are there guys that are very contact driven in their passing, to say the least? Sure. But in order to have any kind of consistent speed and results in this sport, you can't just maul people over on your way to the front. You got to be able to catch him, right? So you can't race specifically thinking about, oh, this guy's knee's messed up, I can take him out that way, or this guy, he's got a bad hand, so let me try to get the other one. No. I mean, as much as some of these guys absolutely delete people, like Pierce Brown did to Jalik Swole 2 weeks ago, to some degree, it's always going to be situational. The two riders have got to be in the same place at the same time, the whole thing's just weird. I wish they'd just be a little more public about when they're going through significant injuries. Just a little bit, especially when it's to the point where freaking everybody and their mother knows. It'd just be good for them to actually just come out and say it, like Deegan with the scaphoid thing. I don't know. Anywho, last thing I guess I want to touch on, Julien Bomer continues to look good in his rookie season. Is he 17? I think 17, maybe 18. I forget.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think he's 17.
Yeah, I know. I know Daniel Blair was actually part of recruiting him. Daniel Blair's taking a sideline seat to being on the TV squad, doing the reporting and everything, and is now working with 250 and junior rider programs. And he was part, not the main, but he was part of the reason that KTM was able to get him signed over. So, anywho, I think he continues to look good. He could have been a top five for this last race, but he did get shoved off the track. I forget who shoved him off, but he was battling for fifth or fourth, and then he just got nudged off a little bit, hit a tough block. I don't think he fully fell over, but it was enough to where he had to put a leg down, come to a complete stop, move a little bit, then finally get back on, came back and got seventh or something like that. I think it was seventh. Overall, still a good ride for him. Not perfect or anything, but really, really solid, especially when you take into account he's a rookie. I mean, do you think he's a guy that could be fighting for wins by the end of the year? I mean, we saw how good he was in Anaheim 1. I mean, the kid's really talented.
Yeah, I think it's possible. I think he's going to have a little bit of luck on his side just because he doesn't have quite the speed yet, and he doesn't have quite the consistent speed to carry throughout the entire moto. So, yeah, if we get some guys that, you know, fall or something happens to them and they're not able to be up there in the front, then I think it's possible. But I think long-term he's going to need a little bit more time, a few more races under his belt to really get that consistent speed throughout the entire 15 minutes in one lap. So I think next year he's going to be definitely a title contender. This year, going to need a little luck to pull off a win. But he's definitely really fast for a rookie.
So what you're saying is, with a little bit of Death Cross, anything is possible.
Anything is possible. Yeah.
Thank you.
And, you know, a good Triple Crown showing, I wouldn't put that outside of the realm of possibilities.
I'm telling you, dude, for Dallas Triple Crown, oh, crap, I can't pick him for Dallas Triple Crown because I picked him this week. You can't
pick him for Dallas. Oh, well, he's not going to racing.
Oh, okay. Never mind. Never mind. I'm good. Yeah. I'm good. I'm good. Yeah. So the next, when we get 6 weeks from now, and we get to the next Triple Crown, I'm hammering the Julien Bomaire pick.
Could be a good one.
So,
well, the tough spot now too is he is considered an all-star, but he's not quite. As far as the betting goes, it's a little bit tough to pick him. He's a tough pick for me, at least.
Crap. Well, maybe there'll be a race or two before where he just slips back into that ninth or tenth. Just one little spot.
Yeah.
You know?
That would actually be beneficial.
Yeah, because he's been so good at fantasy. Down a little. Dude, I just need to be like a ninth in the standings and we're freaking rolling.
Yeah. Yeah, dude.
Although with Ryder D's DNF, he's going to be definitely outside the top eight. So he'll be a good pick.
I would agree with that. Yeah.
Yeah. To briefly wrap up with the, some initial reactions from the debut of the East Coast going into Dallas. Dude, Austin Faulkner, this is the best he's ever looked. He doesn't look like he's doing his traditional overriding to where he always look like he's on the edge of crashing. He's got a new trainer that he's been very, very vocal about how well this new trainer is. Not necessarily, you know, like putting shade on the old one, but just saying, look, this new one, we have a different mentality. We are focusing on technique and making sure that I have the speed, but how do I do that and stay within my own realms, right? And he's been very, very detailed about how much progress they've made. And I think it absolutely showed. He looked phenomenal.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he's going to be really good. You know, that first turn crash definitely messed things up a little bit for some of those top guys that, you know, didn't get a good finish. So we'll have to see how things go, because in that heat race, Deacon was pulling up on him. And, you know, if that race would have been two more laps, he might have gotten the pass. Yeah. And then obviously he went out in that first turn crash. So, yeah, I'm really excited to see what happens, especially with being a Triple Crown. It's going to be awesome.
Oh, yeah. I mean, to get to watch these guys duke it out three times in a row is going to be great. And like I said, Deegan looked good in the heat race, obviously in the main event. Seth Hamaker went bowling. There's no other way to say it. And he ripped a strike.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously it wasn't 100% his fault, but he could have just backed off the throttle and not try to keep sticking his nose in there, knowing that the door was going to shut. And the door shut, he was still there, and he hit Vial. Vial hits Deegan. Deegan hits everybody else. Like,
dude, that crash was bad. I think it was one of the Triumph.
Evan Ferry. Knocked Evan out Ferry, cold.
Dude, just Wall, him, everyone else. Just
to be more specific, Wall, Face, and then everyone just it looked like some out of Looney Tunes, dude. I was like, is he alive?
Yeah.
Like, homie like completely lights out for a little bit. Yeah. And I was honestly surprised they didn't red flag it.
Holy cow. I was also shocked by that. I don't know if it was because of the location, because they were able to get the guys out of the way quickly and get everybody going again. But yeah, I was also surprised. I thought they were going to. But
yeah. Also, 90 degree turns with a very, very long straightaway for a starting spot. Never a good combination.
No.
If you're literally going to go the whole length of, you know, the width of the field of a football field for a start, and they're building up that much speed, make them do a 180 ball turn or something like that. Just make them have to hit the brakes a little bit more and not try to hang it out a little more and maintain that much speed going over 90 degree with nothing. Like, the guys were falling onto concrete. We can't have that. You know, you got to put a bull turn in there. Either that or just put a freaking, put a bunch of wacky inflatable arm flailing two-mans in the dump zone over there. Like, have them fall, like, more hay bales or a freaking trampoline ball or something. Yeah, yeah. I would love a ball pit. Put a ball pit there. So if you crash, not only are you probably still hurting because it's not going to do much, but also you look like a child now. And that is what Vince Freeze looks like when he wrecks himself and other people. So it'd be perfect. So that's all I want to see. If you're going to do a 90 degree lift, put some kind of, like, the guy shouldn't be falling onto concrete. It's a big no-no.
Yeah.
And how Evan Ferry is still alive beyond me. That's the only reason. No. He was out.
I'm pretty sure he finished. Did he not finish the race?
That was Jalik. So Evan Ferry,
which he was in that crash too.
Lights out. Yeah, he was in the crash. Yeah. Jalik went all the way back to sixth. He I think is a sleeper to get some podiums in a race win. He looks phenomenal. And I would say Triumph in general, I was amazed with how mechanically solid they looked and just both had good pace. For them to start with honestly the harder of the two bikes, you know, between 250 and 450 to make, you know, because I mean, heck, you look at what Ty Masterpool did in SMX and motocross. He purposely moved up from 250s to 450s as a privateer because being a privateer as a 450 was cheaper because all the power is already there. You don't have to put in a bunch of crazy stuff to squeeze out a bunch of extra power. It's way cheaper and easier to just build a new 450 and mess with the suspension than it is to try to squeeze out a bunch of power and put all this money with a tiny engine in the 250s. Like that's why there's such a big gap between the haves and the have-nots in 250s is because you have to get a lot of power out of this little, you know, smaller engine. And it's a lot more expensive to do that. And like for the Triumph guys to start with the harder of the two to get right and look that good and get both bikes in the main event. I mean, just hats off to them. And more importantly, their bike did not look like just a solid black, like, you know, new character unlocked of a bike.
Yeah, it was a good looking bike.
Like they actually put graphics and decals on it and she looked pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So hats off to them. They made a good bike so far. No big problems. I think the only thing was I think Evan was without a rear brake for one of the races. And that was the only thing. And that was from most likely from contact. I think they weren't 100% sure, but they assume it was from contact.
Okay, I was going to say, are they just trying something new? Like just, hey, we're going to go no rear brake this time or
nobody tell them.
Yeah.
Let the rookie figure it out.
Yeah.
I don't know, but I think it was most likely from contact. I think either Jalik or Evan Ferry had a little bit of contact in their heat race, so they were without rear brake for the majority of it. I think that's what the story was. I don't know, but Triumph looked great. Forkner looked great. Deegan got mopped and was riding like this, like handlebar at that angle.
Crazy, so he was able to.
He was just that. He just had to double everything, so he was just out of the picture. Cameron McAdoo. He let it all hang out, and I mean all of it. That was wild. I'm sure the media team, like the guys taking pictures of the race, were having, well, pun intended, a ball. Actually, multiple balls. So I just wonder how many – I wonder how much time the media team post-race had to spend censoring all these photos, just taking a great shot of another rider, and there's just a – there's McAdoo going by with his crotch wide open, just everything swinging, going through. I mean, just I didn't like. I don't know if anyone watching the TV broadcast knew what happened when he got caught up in that first turn crash. The crotch in his pants and underwear got completely torn open. So everything, ladies and gentlemen, was hanging out, and he just kept on going. And all I remember was. We got about midway through the race and I was just watching there And I was like, man, Deegan got taken out. McAdoo got taken out. Fiao got taken out. And I was like, wait, McAdoo got up, right? It's like, oh, yeah, he's up. Why aren't they putting the camera on him? Like, they keep showing Deegan doubling over everything with the sideways handlebar. They showed Vial. Why haven't they shown McAdoo yet? And then when the race is over, I open my phone to Twitter, and the first thing is the censored photo. And I was like, oh, that's why. So I can't imagine being a TV director that night, dude, because every other shot, you're like, oh, wait, no, here he comes. Pan left, pan right, pan left, camera C. Just playing keep away with the camera. But so that was wild. I'm interested to see how that all stacks up in Dallas. A lot of interesting characters, a lot of guys who need to make up some points from being a part of that that pileup. And can't wait to watch it. So, yeah, that pretty much does it for this episode. I'm thinking next week we come back and we talk about all the buzz and I guess somewhat media carnage that's come out with F1 the last couple of days and the car reveals and some rule changes, all that good stuff. So next week we'll take a break from Supercross because Supercross is off for a week. So we'll come back and talk about some F1. And then the boys will actually be in Dallas for the Supercross race in 2 weeks. So we're going to go there. I don't know if we're going to do any live reporting. I don't know about that. But we'll be there. We'll be there in force, we're gonna go watch some freaking dirt bikes, and then we're gonna come back and report on it, and get back on the pod a couple days later. So, stay tuned for that, and peace.
Deuces.